What we're going to do while we're waiting for more people to come toddling in, as they inevitably do, we're going to talk about last night.
You're smiling.
I'm smiling. We're going to have some people tell some stories. Yeah, I see some smiles.
This was not my fault this time.
Okay, show of hands. Who was at the bar last night? Yep. Tell the truth, shame the devil. All right, he's smiling because he can't help it. Last night was our hands-on demo at the Eagle. It's not optimal to have practice play, kinky play at a bar, but it worked well for us last night. Last night we had a very good soundtrack thanks to our own Sebastian. He spent $20 on the soundtrack, and it just played through the whole time we were there. It was very nice. But far more important, as I said, last night was what they call a sausage party. Because last night, see, if you're a heterosexual male and you go to a party and it's just a bunch of dudes and there's not enough chicks around, then the nickname is a sausage party. Last night, how many tops did we have? Well, it was nearly all tops and one greedy bottom. And one really good switch. But what's far more important, see, this could have been a conundrum. It could have been a problem. It could have been a hassle. Except it wasn't. We did a lot of top talk. It was a brotherhood opportunity that we took full advantage of, and it was a blast. I think we can all say it was a fun time, don't you think? And we will have pictures. Yes, we will. Yeah. What?
I'm going to give him the hand, and he can do it when he wishes.
All right. Anyways, what happened is that we played with clothespins. We did more advanced flogging and cat and nine tails work. We did some CBT, cock and ball torture, for those who are not familiar with the terminology. That was my favorite part, my special favorite. But far more important, like I said, is that it was a really congenial vibe. A lot of people got to meet each other really closely for the first time. And more than that, again, it was yet another event where we felt like we already had known each other. You know, everybody was comfortable. Everyone was in their best space, I think. I think you guys can agree with me. And it was just a joyful, joyful time for us. And I think somebody's still endorphinated. And you've probably still got some marks. Yeah, a few, yeah. So it was a very, very successful evening. Unfortunately, we were going to be switching the hands-on demo night to a Pilates studio. Unfortunately, the beautiful, beautiful space, which is probably three or four times bigger than this one, big empty space, they're probably going to be renting it out to somebody for a yoga studio. So we won't be moving the location, unfortunately. I wish we were, because it would be an ideal space. I had to drive out there and talk to them yesterday in order to establish this information because they had not been returning any of my messages. But, so I think people have toddled in. So I would like to introduce the primary topic for tonight. Now, I actually lost a friend over the topic tonight. He got very, very, very angry with me to the point where we're not talking anymore. Because he felt very strongly that talking about something heavy-duty like this, I'll be right with you, was too heavy-duty and too close to the bone, and damn it, we're a fetish men's group. My retort is, we are a men's group as well. That sometimes we have to go deep. Sometimes we have to go serious. This is the last deep and serious one for a while. We go in cycles. You know, every few months we do this. The reason why is because talks like this one, where we all share deep and hardcore, are actually a beautiful growth opportunity for the people that are ready. The more you put into these sorts of discussions, the more you get out of them. That's always been true. I'm going to be bringing lots of opportunities for you guys to talk about how all this stuff affects you. The topic tonight is about male grief. Now, how many people watched the video, the intro video? I know you did. Okay, you guys did. Nobody else? Interest. Oh, you did. Okay. So why don't you tell me what you said earlier about the video, please?
It resonated quite a bit, actually. I showed it to my boss this morning, and he's going to show it to some of his colleagues, because, I mean, I deal with kids, boys in particular, on a daily basis who are pissed off, but I don't think they're really pissed off. There's a lot of sadness about not being able to express stuff, and if you express stuff growing up, you're called a pussy or a fag or whatever, and it's, or anything else. And I still see that on the playground, and I do the best I can not to let that happen. So I was really excited to see that, and I mm-hmm. showed it to him this morning, and we were both kind of choked up again watching it. So. Mm-hmm.
It's a deep topic. So why on earth would we have such a thing? Why would we need to talk about this? Because I am committed to the excellence of everyone that is hearing this. Really. Because if we're going to have happier days, we have to be true. We have to tell our truth. We have to be real. We have to share from the heart. Because that way we bond with each other better, and that way we have a happier life. Because there's a lot of reasons, and we're going to go through them. A lot of the reasons why it's difficult for us as males. I'll just give a few examples, just, you know, as an intro. We're expected to already know. And yet somehow or another, the things that we're supposed to already know don't really show up for us. We don't have the guy wearing the t-shirt that says mentor on the front of it showing up. He said, I'll take care of that. I'll make sure that you know what you need to know. How to have really good sex with another man. We never got that class back in sixth grade, did we? How to have a long-term love life relationship with another man and still be a slut and still get love. We never got that class, did we? We never learned how to deal with grief properly because we swim in a culture that says, man up, strap on a pair. You know, don't be a pussy, which of course means it's a derogatory term for women, because women, of course, you know, everybody assumes that to be a woman is way below being a man. And that's the sort of shit we grow up with, and we could go on and on. We could fill this board eight times over with phrases saying, big boys don't cry. You know, I'm real tempted to do that, but I think you get the point. The real problem is our culture does not help us very much to become good men. We're told, well, real men do that. Real men don't eat quiche. What the fuck is that? Or we get information about, you know, what it is that we're supposed to be doing, and it doesn't really jibe with our view of reality. You know, the example I bring up at least once a month of going to the prom. You know, I don't think that really prepared any of us that went to the prom for the life that we are living at this moment. It's a good example. I tend to repeat it. But the reason why I bring this up is because in order for us to get past stuff, we have to recognize it, how it shows up in our lives. Quick show of hands. How many guys here find it very difficult to cry? Exactly. Okay, of the ones who, thank you, of the ones, who, that's about a little over half the guys. Of the guys who did not raise your hand, did you ever have problems with it? Raise your hand. There you go. Yeah. A good number more. Yeah. That somehow or another you were able to get past it. Did someone help you get past it? Would you share for a moment?
As far as crying goes?
Yeah.
I usually schedule a time and it's like once a year.
Wow. Cool. Okay. I'm Tony, by the way.
Tony, nice to meet you.
What is your name?
Dan.
Dan, welcome to you. Talk to me during the break. I want to make sure you get the welcome message. We have a lot of new faces here tonight, and I'm very glad. Let's all make them feel extra welcome, please, gentlemen. The thing about crying, you know, speaking for myself, I think part of the reason why this deep, deep topic showed up is that I've been going through a bit of a crisis lately myself in about eight different directions. So, you know, it kind of bleeds into my environment, and I start picking the heavier topics. So I apologize for that. But sometimes that's how life shows up. We've got a lot of things going on that we don't talk about as males. That's why it's important that we talk about it. Because what if we've got a burden that we're eager to leave by the side of the road? When we have people with us who are being dedicated listeners, it's a lot more likely that we'll be able to leave it. And that has happened with a bunch of guys that come to these events, these meetings here. The people who have shared the deepest stuff are the ones who lighten up the most in the weeks following afterwards. Because it's like, oh, thank God, I finally shared my darkest secret and people still like me. That's really what this is about. We're being dedicated listeners. We're being dedicated witnesses to other people's pain sometimes. Not every meeting. You know, it'd be kind of dreary if we did it all the time. But now, one thing that I've talked about in the past, and I'm shifting all over the place, and I apologize for that. It's what I do. But what I've talked about in the past, at least two or three times, is the concept, speaking as a Roman Catholic boy, speaking as an ignorant outsider, but talking about the bar mitzvah. I'm speaking this one for the audio portion. My understanding of bar mitzvah as a fantasy of what I always wanted for myself is to have the males of the family gather and celebrate the fact that I've arrived, that I'm now a man among men, that they take ownership of the fact that I am one of them and that they will make sure that I learn what is needed in order to be a good man, to be a mensch, to be a stand-up kind of guy, that they will teach me life skills. They'll make sure that I get extra help financially so that I never struggle. If I go down a bad path, then they will go after me and bring me back to the good path. It's a nice fantasy. How many people here got that? Not seeing any hands. It's a lovely thought, isn't it? I don't know. Yeah, that's a possibility. Yeah. Well, I mean, as far as the concept, not so much the ritual. But it's a lovely thought, isn't it? Okay, show of hands. How many guys here never had the relationship with their genetic father that they really wished for? Yeah, that's a lot of hands. You know, and I'm not saying that that's the only viewpoint. How many people had an absolutely ideal relationship with their genetic father? Show of hands. Okay, go ahead.
Explain idea. I had a great relationship with my dad, but I don't know if it was idea.
Okay. I misphrased it. Yeah. So the guys who had a good relationship with your father, I want you to raise your hand and let's hear about it. I want to know. Please.
Well, I came out when I was 18. My father was the first one of 10. And his youngest brother was also gay back in the 50s. Mm-hmm. So when I told him I was gay, he just looked at me and goes, "We've known that since you were 4 years old."
Very nice.
After that, it was a very smooth, very open relationship.
Very good. I'm glad to hear it. Who else? Yes.
I could tell my dad anything.
Really? Uh-huh. Did you tell him that last time we awarded you the Silver Stallion Award?
No.
Oh, okay.
No. I lost him too many years ago.
Me too. 24 years now. I was doing the math on the way over here. Yeah. But who else? Okay, let's hear about relationship with your dad.
My dad and I were very good friends. I mean, we were very good friends. And he kind of rolled with the punches of everything I announced. I was quite not too subtle in my 20s. I mean, coming out to my parents was basically, I told them, you know, I'm gay. If you don't like it, that's your problem. Mm-hmm. And that was the end of that. And that was the end of that. That was the end of it with them. Mm-hmm. I also had the gift of, from my father taking care of me as a baby to taking care of him when he was near death, and he was like a child. I had, you know, I had to keep him in bed. I had to hold him. I had to feed him. So we went full circle together. And
very good.
We were old souls. We knew each other. I mean, I knew that we knew each other before. Nice. Yeah.
That's wonderful. Please.
Yay, it's my turn. So I'm Patrick. So my question to the group is, how many people have asked themselves why they didn't kill him?
That's a good point.
Why didn't you take him?
I know why. I wasn't strong enough at the time.
Same here.
Pitchfork.
say
I was terrified.
Yeah, I would have gutted him. But yeah. So yeah, what would you like to share?
No, I just asked the question, why didn't I was terrified of my father for the longest time. I would have never even thought across him. Yeah.
Why didn't you kill him?
Yeah.
If you had asked me.
Yeah. Well, we'll get to that part shortly. But we're kind of jumping ahead here. Yes, thank you, Marty. We could go into an awful lot of very deep stuff in regard to our father. And that's not really the main topic tonight, but it is salient in the sense that it's about our relationship with men, as men, around men. A big problem that we have as gay men that I've seen is that we learn the hard way, we have to because we're horny, to learn how to attract someone. But then we have to figure out on our own how to keep them. And that can be a real conundrum. You know? I mean, like, for instance, how many guys here are single and wish they were not? Raise your hand. Okay? Exactly. So that's a good number of guys. Well, if I have my way, I'm, you know, the pimp daddy will have you all set up before too much longer. That's my job. But the reason why I bring all this up is because as males, there are things that are hardwired into us. As males, you might notice that the moment we get hair on our balls, we go through a phase where we have to fit in, and we have to enforce that others fit in. That's why bullying suddenly becomes such a monstrous problem, because it's wired into us to enforce conformity. Hi, baby. But what people don't really talk about is what happens in 30 years. We talk about the male passages, the different passages that a man goes through. Well, probably one of the most important passages is what is jokingly called midlife crisis. But it's actually not so much a crisis as long as you understand what it's about. And this happens. Some people hit it right around 39, age 39. Some people wait until they're in their 50s. My wish is that everybody goes through it at least once every 3 months, because it's actually a rather healthy process, because you start questioning, am I happy in the path that I'm in? Am I making everybody else happy at my own expense? Because a man gets to a certain point in his life, whenever that is, and he says, I've spent my whole life trying to please everybody else. Trying to fit in, trying to, you know, give the right answers to the right questions, not looking like a geek, not dressing like a geek, not, you know, saying things that offend people. Wait a second. I can see the day coming when I won't have so much young and pretty left. And I need to understand what this next part of my life is about, because I can see the day coming when I won't be able to attract people anymore. How am I going to spend the rest of my life as a man? That's the time when we get the vast majority of gay men who go from desiring leather to living leather. Because that's when they say, you know, I am so tired of pleasing all my friends by trying to pretend that I'm not attracted to this kinky shit. Fuck them. I'm going to tell my truth. I'm going to live my life. I'm going to live it the way I need it to be. How many people here waited until, you know, they were like in their 30s or 40s or 50s before they started living the life, you know? There you go. So would you care to share something about that?
It makes me wonder why we vote for people for awards that aren't 50.
How do you mean?
Why do we only elect 30-year-olds
yep.
for this stuff? I'm not dissing on them because I don't disrespect them at all. I'm very happy with the people that represent us today.
Mm-hmm.
If that's the case, if the people that really turn and actually feel themselves in a leather community and express it in the most sincere way, and why aren't we promoting them?
I told you, we'll take care of that next
year. I know. that wasn't my point. But why? Because I agree with you. I think you're absolutely right. That's when your soul has nothing left to bother with. You've got nothing left to prove. You don't really give a shit. You're pure. You're beautiful. you express and you're sincere. Why can't that be what we all want to reflect outward?
What I'm perceiving in what you're saying, and I have no disagreement with it, but we're actually blending two male passages into one in this conversation at the moment, which is midlife crisis and male menopause, which is an important thing too, where you suddenly realize the dick doesn't work so well anymore. The young and pretty is pretty much gone. When people turn to look, when you walk in the door, they turn away. That's another important transition. In the women's community, they have something called croning, C-R-O-N-I-N-G, when a woman takes ownership of the fact that she's no longer a sex pot. And society may not see her as valuable, but she and her peers do. And that is something that we're doing as men within this group too, which is celebrating all phases, not just the young and pretty, not just the hung and the young, not just the people who can compete on a genetic sweepstakes that none of us really had any control over in the first place. That we've got all these different phases, but the more we talk about them, the more comfortable we are about it. The reason why I bring this up, my whole point, why I'm wandering through these points, there's a lot of stuff to cover here, and we're going to have a conversation, a big conversation, about any part of this that you guys want to. So start storing up what you want to say. It's going to get pretty heavy duty. But I'm just introducing the topic and introducing the concepts. But the reason why this comes up is because we are men. We are males. We are brothers. We are uncles. We are grandfathers. We are sons and grandsons. We are sirs and submissives. We're friends. That's what this is all about. This is all about us finding a role and being glad that we're in it. Because it's not a role that's put on us by somebody else. It's something we choose for ourselves. What I've been doing since day one of creating this group is inviting men of my generation and older to be loving uncles. And it's happening a lot. Because as I've said, you know, a few weeks back, actually pretty repeatedly, that as males we are suspect. If you talk to a 63-year-old man about younger gay men, his immediate visceral response is, oh, but I'm not a molester. I'm not trying to force anything on him. The reason why is because our entire culture is saying, stay away from the young. You have no value to the young. You're just a bunch of old perverts. And, well, yeah, technically speaking, yes. A moment. Hold that thought. And I like that. You know, if you can't help being that way, be good at it. But also there is value to us in other ways as well. We can use our influence to help the younger ones. We can use our wisdom to guide them. We can use our life experience to help them understand the perspective of what they're going through. We can let them know that they have a future. That I'm, you know, if I'm happy, they get to see me happy, and they get to know that someday they get to be happy too. That someday they get to look this good when they get to that age. You know? That they find out that they have a future. And as I always say, they also get to find out that we didn't all die. That we're still here. We're not a bunch of ghosts. We're not pterodactyls surrounded by small furry mammals that we can't relate to. We're all part of the same tribe. And it's time we had that conversation over and over and over again to remind everybody that we do have a place that has nothing to do with the profile that we have online, which is a different place and a different story and a different thing. But on a human level, we have value as good men of the community. Again, when we are at our best, we're excellent protectors, nurturers, decision makers, and security team. You know, we can calm things down by taking responsibility for how well things go. So, Tommy, what were you going to say?
Yeah, you just sit there and made the comment a second ago with society trying to keep the older guys from the younger generation.
Yep.
Those people that are trying to do that, they've got to be some of the most idiotic morons I've ever, that there is. Because, I mean, if it wasn't for y'all, I mean, how the hell would I know what to do?
In order for this to get better, we have to have this conversation. In order for us to find more people that add value to our tribe who are coming up along behind us, we have to consciously want to stand shoulder to shoulder so that they can stand on our shoulders. But here's the thing, it's not that just the young that need it. You know, I'm reminded, see, I just adopted a rescue dog, a lab rescue dog. And he's a year old, and I could have gotten a puppy, and I could have gotten an 8-year-old. That there's a lot of need out there, and that applies to the men in this room too. That it's not just the young that have a hole in their heart that needs to be filled with more love and more appreciation and more respect and kindness. All of us, our plates are not entirely full. We could compare stories with each other. We all have a good story about how we were raised or how we didn't like what happened or how it showed up. But the fact of the matter is, there's not too many people around with a really full plate. That we have hunger, we have grief. Grief is the opposite of desire. If we lose what we desire, then we grieve. If we're desiring to be a rock star by the time we're 30 and it doesn't happen, we grieve. If we desire lifelong love and then it feels too late, we grieve. Or if we grieve for the fact that, you know, the hydraulics don't work quite so well anymore. You know. Because there's a lot of desire in all of us. But there's also a lot of grief. So, having introduced the topic, having gotten a whole bunch of mixed up stuff in the mix of it, I would like to see show of hands of somebody who would like to share anything on anything that we've discussed so far. Deep topic. Yes, please.
Bloody now.
Well, you have.
Aaron would be the only one to go up. But we've talked about several topics that are currently activated in my life, and I've been able to put into words what I'm experiencing, and a lot of that has to do with fear, and who do you trust with such potent information. I am grieving, and I know this. September 2nd would have been my 28th anniversary with my partner, and he's been dead since 08. And since I came to this group, it's the first time I've allowed myself to explore, how can I put this delicately, the beauty of imagination, in a sense that I'm willing to learn how to play in different ways that can be uncomfortable, quite painful, and yet exquisitely joyful. Thank you very much. And I never thought I'd be able to trust someone that was a stranger to me, namely you, and I didn't think I would actually enjoy flogging, and yet I found it intoxicating, the sensation of it, and the fact that there was so much compassion in the way you expressed yourself with me and reassured me that everything was going to be okay. And I haven't had that since my partner died. I know what a lifetime relationship is. I know what a long-term thing is. But the majority of my friends, a lot of them died in the 80s and 90s. And so there's this void of energy and people that is just missing from my life today. And I was not willing to risk my heart to create new relationships and new friendships. And so I probably would have drank or drugged myself to death, but for some reason, my partner's deathbed, he said, I need you to promise me that you're going to live. And I didn't think I could do that. And so I sought recovery. And since I've been clean and sober, my life really has just blossomed. And this is just another facet in my diamond, this experience. I thought it impossible to remain a lump of coal. I've always been a lover, and I've always had insight into the concept of unconditional love and forgiveness, which allowed me to eventually accept humanity as it is. But before, I was terrified to navigate in it and be in the world and be a part of the world. And recovery, taught me that my life is worth living. And that no matter what I think or feel, but as long as I'm willing to continue trying and growing and expanding, that eventually I'll get there. Suicide is not on the table anymore. I actually enjoy new things and new people and new energy. And some people say this is deviant or kinky or whatever. I just say it's really a journey of self-discovery for me. How far am I willing to go, and are there boundaries that I can not only shatter but create anew? You know, this is as limitless as the vastness of the fucking universe in my mind. So I have to really be mindful of who I interact with and trust with my mind, body, spirit. Because there are people out there that are predators, that will destroy you, that will hurt you. And I've heard the horror stories from young men who had bad things happen to them. I was working with a kid this weekend. He said he had gone innocently to a man's house. He woke up bound and tied to the bed. And seven or eight guys around getting high, doing meth, and fucking just wearing him out and probing him and blindfolding him, taking it off and letting him see the horror of what he was in, and he could not escape. And this went on for days before they got tired and decided to let him go. I thought, fuck, therefore, that's me. That's exactly what my fear imagined happened to me, and you taught me that there is a more compassionate way, a more trusting way, a way to allow you to not to fear your imagination. There's two things I had to remember. One, everything I think isn't true. The other is, I have to remember that what I think I create. And you've taught me in this room that if I pursue this wisely and patiently, that I will meet people that I can love, they'll love me back, and they'll be my mentors and teachers, and eventually become my friends. And that has happened for me in this room. So I often invite some of my fellow men in recovery to actually come explore this. And I see several of them here. And my greatest joy is knowing that there's pleasures that await. If I'm just willing to continue learning, that's the thing. I'm learning more about myself in ways that I had not seen coming. And I think that it is your passion and dedication and the nurturing that you give to us with your life experience, really. I understood what the young man was saying, because I find that with maturity and wisdom comes experience. And a lot of the youth today, it's more of a vanity thing than anything. And people come in all shapes and sizes and colors and
Levels.
Okay, in experience levels. I am inexperienced, but I have played before. But I'm willing to risk it and override that sensation of fear and anxiety about asking for what I exactly want. And the scary part for me was that I didn't really know what I wanted. But I came here and learned more and more and more. And I thought, ooh, I'll try that. Ooh, that sounds good. Oh, yeah? I said, oh, maybe I have to try that on, too. There's so many different hats you can wear in this realm. And it's really more about leather than more than just about leather. It's also about the spirit of the men who are willing to be vulnerable, to trust someone implicitly when they can, in many ways, hold your life in their hands. I'm grateful to be here tonight. My heart is broken and I don't know how to fix it. And so my solution was to ask Magnum to please bring me with him tonight. And he did. And so here I am, you know.
Glad you're here. Thank you. Good man, DJ. Thank you. Well done. So, we have another hand over here and another one over here. So, you first, then him, then you.
I'm going to talk loud.
And let's close some doors, too. Let's keep the air conditioning in.
How's that? My name's Louie. Some of you guys know me. I heard this woman speak once, and she said something that was so deeply profound to me that, but I didn't know what the fuck she was talking about at the time. And then many years later, I figured it out. She said, one day I fell in love with this man, this Irish man, and we'd make love, and we'd fight, we'd make love, we'd fight, we'd make love, and we'd fight. And then one day, he ripped my heart out and threw it on the ground and stepped on it. And I said, God, it's good to be alive. And I said, what the fuck is she talking about? And a few years ago, I broke up with my boyfriend, and I was with him for a really long time, over a decade. And I learned exactly what she's talking about. What she was talking about, you know, knowing that pain and joy, both things, and then getting to the other side of it and then looking back and knowing what it really was the most amazing more than a decade of my life, because I was truly in love. I knew what love was.
Yep.
Love was that time, and that time is gone now, but you know, if I die tomorrow, you guys will all know that, oh, that guy was really in love with somebody at one time.
Yep.
And I know it. And so I feel really bad for people who have never known that. And I think most of us, because we're mature, except for you, more mature, I should say, sorry, know that. And anyway, yesterday I was talking to a friend of mine, too, this is another point. And we were talking about a friend that we have who's just has an insatiable sexual appetite. And we were talking about him, and he says, I feel sorry for him. And I said, why? And he goes, well, because what about when, you know, his looks fail and you know, when he gets older and I'm like, me? And he's all, no, not like you, girl. But that's what he meant. But I'm like, I go, well, I don't feel sorry for him at all. Because, I mean, I think, you know, yeah, we get older, but there's a lot more to us than that. You know, there's a lot more to me. I know that,
yep.
You know. There's other things, you know. I have other qualities and other things that, you know, that I bring to the proverbial table. I think the next person I meet will just be different than the last person I had if I meet someone else that's special. Anyway, that's all I want to say.
Nice. Good points. Thank you. Who is it? You were next?
So, I wanted to thank him for what he brought to the table, because he inspired me on a couple of points. So if you think about the description that he gave about the younger man that woke up after a few days being blindfolded and ravaged by various people on crack, that was my life since I was 2, okay? So I was trafficked by my father in a motorcycle gang since I was 2. I was a commodity, right? And I had to come to terms as I grew up with the separation of your only sense of love is what you know with that one person, because that's what your definition is. You think that that's love. And then you think that
love is being shared by these other people when you're a utensil.
Yeah.
Okay. But you don't know that because you're too young to know that. You still associate love. And you don't hate anybody because it's what you're experiencing. And so then you take that down the road, and what you hang on to when you finally lose that. So eventually that association, the usefulness of you as a utensil, is gone. In your mind, you've lost love. You didn't really, but you think you did because it's the only love you know, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you've had actually your heart broken by the only person that ever showed it to you in that sense and is ever going to, like that, is ever going to in your life. So you're 14 years old and you're done. It's over. But you know what? You can rebuild on anything. That's what I'm telling you. You can rebuild on anything. You can build beauty out of anything. And that's what this group is to me. Because when I'm around leather, do I think about abuse? I think about beauty. I think about love. When I smell leather, I smell the things that I associate the most positive things on earth with in the most earthy, childlike way you can even imagine. It's the most beautiful experience on earth. So if I'm standing in a room at, you know, the last leather pride, I am the biggest horn dog in that room. And I'm 14 years old with the biggest heart on earth. And I'm thinking, you know what? That's what it's about. It's not about that bullshit. It's not about rejection. It's not about misplaced, you know, emotions. What it is the purity of it. The purity of the experience as a child that you can hang on to and you can build on and you can relish for the rest of your life regardless of your age. And that is why I'm such a 56-year-old horn dog at this point. Because you know what? When I envision it, that's what I envision. That's what I'm living. I'm living the beauty and the excitement and the thrill and the purity, and that's why the love in this room is so special to me, because that's what everybody in this room brings to me.
Yep.
Is the honesty, and I mean, how many people are just gonna turn their back on you because it's easier to do that and you're too old to beat, you're too old to control. In this room, you're not too old to love,
mm-hmm.
and you're not too old to have value,
mm-hmm.
and you're not too old to be special. And it's beautiful. It's just beautiful.
Well, if I may interject here as a personal observation, it's very easy to love you.
Thank you, sir.
You make it very, very easy. And see, what resonates with me, you know, I mean, you guys have heard me talk about my past. It wasn't there. But it was, you know, pretty horrific in my own way. This is not a competition.
No.
His experience is 100% his. My experience is 100% mine, etc. This is not a race to the bottom of victimhood. Instead, it's sharing openly and saying, this is my story, and this is how I turned out. That's the important thing. I learned very clearly how to be a sociopath. I learned how to be a bully. I learned how to be a harmful person without responsibility. And like I said, I chose not to be that. And I choose every day, frankly. I have to, or else I'd be in prison. I choose to break the family cycle. Because the abuse that I went through is something that my dad went through when he was young. And his dad went through when he was young. And I'm one of 10 siblings. And I spoke to my siblings and I said, we've got to break the family cycle. And we did. It stopped. Doesn't happen anymore. We've got their kids and my kids that have never abused anybody. And they've got kids. And that's what we have to do in order to end this nightmarish thing. Because back when his parents were younger, they didn't have the vocabulary. They didn't have the popular science. They didn't have the conversations that we have about abuse. back then, you could look in Life magazine in the 1950s, and there'd be, you know, the mother-in-law getting killed with an axe. Ha, 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 mother-in-law joke. Well, they don't do that anymore, do they? But that back then, you see the kid in the corner with stars coming out of his ass because he's just gotten spanked. Well, they don't do that anymore, do they? Back then, it was funny. There was a lot of shit that was funny back then that isn't funny anymore. As the generations move on, we've learned how to have conversations like this one. The reason why this conversation can get real dreary tonight, and it's about to get monstro fucking dreary in a moment, is that we have to have the balance in our lives to find the joy. Life is risk. As men, we have reasons to grieve. As gay men, we have other reasons to grieve to throw on the pile. As gay fetish men, we have another thing to throw on the pile too. Again, talking about grief, show of hands in here. How many people have lost someone to AIDS? Yeah. Vast majority of people in the room. We could do a competition. Who's lost more? That's not the point. The fact of the matter is, as I'm always making the point, we are deeply wounded as a tribe. That's why this group was created, was to try through the most genteel and kindest possible way to heal the wound that is in our hearts. Even if you don't know someone who has died, you are suffering thereby. Because there are people in this room, spiritually with us, who are not here in real life. We carry them in our hearts. Because we could never, ever let go of them. We want somebody to know that they lived and that they were that they mattered, that they were important to us. This is a deep topic. If I'd announced I was going to talk about it, there'd be about a third of the people in this room showing up tonight. Because people are so afraid that their grief is so deep that it will kill them if they deal with it. It's a hard topic. We could get real crying, you know, crying and mourning and grieving real easily on this one, couldn't we? We're not going to. You don't have to be too scared. But first we have to mention that it exists. It is in the room with us at all times. And that's okay. What I did with this group was to start with the threshold at the bottom, at the very bottom. The reason why is because too many of us are afraid. A lot of guys, especially my generation, I call them timid woodland creatures. Because we've been wounded so many times, and we've worried about losing loved ones. Because if we invest in more of them, they're just going to fucking die like the rest of them. And yeah, I got passion on the topic. I have no shame about that. But in order for us to live, in order for us to thrive, in order for us to succeed, we have to invest in each other. We're human. We have to have brothers. We have to have sons. We have to have sirs and you know, grandpas. We need to have all of us. Because we're here now. We're alive now. And as long as we live grieving only, it's a pretty fucking miserable life. But if we live as children, and this is going to sound horrid, and people really hate this when I say this, there are people that think that this thing I'm about to say is about the creepiest thing you could say, but I say it now. We have to start over. We have to start from the absolute baseline of how nice are you? Because that's what we need more than anything, is your niceness, your sweetiness, your kindness, your big fucking heart. Because that has sustained us through the tough times. And it's going to continue to sustain us, but we sustain each other by being kind, by being open-hearted, by being a good man of the tribe. Because, yes, we have this terrible tragedy in our past. It's going to keep wounding us for a long time. We can be at the effect of it, or we can do something about it. That's what this group is about. Doing something that actually gives us hope and reasons to go on and to thrive, not to survive, but to thrive. Because we need this. We need what I'm seeing around here. These are really good people. There isn't a single one of you. You know, I mean, there's new people here, so I can't make a value judgment about it yet. I'll let you know. No, no, what I'm saying is that the people who would never show up here are, you know, I'm going to make a value judgment. They're not ready. But I assume the people, if you're in this room, you're ready for your next phase. So let me give you a little preview before we go to the next person. This next phase, I'm going to be doing less with the group, with the larger group. I will continue doing this. I will continue organizing big group events where everybody wins and everybody's joyful and everybody, their energy just spirals through the ceiling. We've had a lot of those. There's plenty more on the way. I invite you. I'm going to keep doing that. I'm calling it tribal vibe. When you hear tribal vibe, trust me, that's the one you want to run towards. You want to scamper with your tail in the air because that's the ones where we're going to find more and more reasons to be joyful, playful, affectionate, loved, and loving. It's going to get real intense from this point on because I won't be in charge of so many things. I can focus on that which brings us together so that everybody wins, so that everybody gets what they're looking for at whatever level they're ready for. Occasions for joy is what's the plan for what's coming up, for the work that I'll be doing. So just be aware that that's coming. There'll be more official announcements soon. So back to the main topic. Who has somebody else had their hand up? Who was it? Yes, I'm running over here. You first.
Okay. Well, just something that came to mind, kind of about in the vein of grieving, kind of grieving for lost time, but happy that I'm making up for lost time. The other night, I was over at a friend's house, and we were watching a DVD of a bunch of old videos from the 80s, 70s and 80s, stuff from VHS tape, and it's all this crazy stuff. It's called Everything is Terrible, but it was like infomercials and all this terrible video that they had, video production they'd done back in the day. One of the videos they showed was a video for kids about how to identify a stranger and what to look for to stay away from someone who's suspect.
Yeah.
And I watched the video, and what you had said in the past was going through my head of how we're kind of programmed as kids that instantly any older man that we don't know is the worst possible person in the entire world, and we need to run screaming from them. Obviously, everyone needs to take care and not just walk off with some person of any sex. But in the video, they made the people out to be like guys with male pattern baldness that had facial hair, that smoked a cigar, and another guy that looked at, I'm like, and every single guy that they showed was some sort of take on either a bear or a Leatherman or a motorcycle guy, or they all, I was like, I sit in a room full of these guys every week, and you know, I just was,
and we've only abducted one young person.
Right. And I was just thinking, I'm like, you know, how much time did I waste avoiding those people even as an adult? Because that image of what a bad person was so much drilled into my head. And I just went, you know, I avoided the leather and fetish community as a result of it. Because I'm like, oh, well, no, those people, you know, those are the freaky bad people that are going to do horrible things to me. And yes, in some ways, but you know, found out I enjoy a lot of that. So, you know, it also brought to mind with this group and how, you know, there's some opposition to us going deep into certain subjects and how that was viewed as something that was not really necessary as part of being, you know, involved with leather and fetish. And I went, you know, if it wasn't for the deep topics, if it wasn't for the invite you made to me 2 years ago where I, you know, started following the Facebook group and getting an idea of what everybody was all about, and then finding a topic that piqued my interest that finally got me out of my chair and got me down here. And it was a deep subject. It wasn't like, you know, what everyone's favorite vlogger was. It was about the personality types and how that relates to identifying as a person, a Leatherman or a person of fetish. And, you know, I go, it's great if there are some people out there that can just pick up the gear, put it on, look great, feel great, and just go right in, dive right into the community and not have a problem. But that's a minority of the people in the community. The vast majority, I would say,
probably need a little more coaxing, a little more nudging, a little more hand-holding than that. And if there's not a place where that's happening, then you're excluding a huge number of people by saying, like, well, we can't talk about deep things. Because that, there's a whole bunch of people that aren't gonna ever connect, because they're gonna look at it and go, oh, it's just all about having the right gear and looking pretty in it, and that's it, and there's never gonna be anything beyond that, and so I don't feel that I'm going to identify with that. I may be a kinky person, but what's expressed outwardly just by going by visual alone would not be enough to have been an appeal to me. So, and I think that's probably the same for a lot of people in this room.
Now, just to settle the controversy, when you said I may be a kinky person, you are. You are. Okay, so with that thought, let's take a short break. We're going to resume with you. So 10 minutes, guys. Okay, new people to me. New people, come up to me. Yeah.
And I am the best boy with the dads, and I think I'm a pretty good dad with the boys. And it's whatever you feel inside here that you need to change toward or go to. It's just like fetishes, and I'm almost done.
No, you keep going.
I used to want to do sounding so bad. I thought that was the neatest thing in the world, but I always ran away from it. It scared me, and it took me years and years and years before finally I met someone who I trusted that did it, and I did it with him, and it was the best thing in the world. Now it's one of my favorite things in the world to do. And I enjoy telling other people how to do it. Well, I actually enjoy showing people how to do it. So that's the point I'm trying to make, is don't let something that you want to do keep you from doing it because you're afraid of the change or the fear or, you know, the midlife crisis of it or whatever you want to call it. Just do it. Just, you know, just go for what you want to do.
Well, it brings up the whole concept of risk. You know, we all have that little voice in our head that says, don't do that. It's not a good idea. It's a bad idea. Well, the whole point of that little voice is to keep your life a nice flat line. Because if you don't take chances, you're not going to crash and burn. But you're also never going to reach the heights either. That life is risk. We have to have the cycle of life. The intention of this group is to encourage each other by having a big support system of continuing to have ups and downs, but having the trend move upward to reach a new level in our lives. And it's been happening to a lot of guys. You know, show of hands, how many people in the time that you've come to know the group and show up that your life has taken an upward turn? Yeah, quite a few. And that's the intention. And that's really what the payoff is. There has to be a payoff. Nobody does anything unless there's a payoff. But the payoff is that we get more really great guys who show up and who absolutely contribute with all their hearts, and they get thanked for it. People who are kind aren't necessarily doing it for a thank you, but they're sure as hell not doing it for a fuck you. And that we need acknowledgement. We need to know that we're okay. We need validation from the people around us. We're not stone. We're not just islands. So thank you for sharing. All right. So who else? Yes, here I come. I'm scampering.
So on that note, just things that I've, for me to free myself and to experience freedom in my life, I've done a couple of things. Like at one point I moved to the Middle East and for business, and it was air-to-ground missiles was my business, and my job was to dodge them during a live missile tests. Rock on, bitch. And then, and I challenge, my point is, I've challenged myself way beyond the norm, right? Like, unrealistically stupid, you don't care about yourself in some cases. But you know what? I can run out in front of the train. That's what I'm saying. Run out in front of it and live for 5 seconds. 5 seconds, just run out there and live like you never lived before. And you don't have to do that. But I drove across live minefields. I was strafed by stupid aircraft with 30 caliber machine guns. This isn't even a war scene, right? This is just life. It was selling weapons. It was living it. I lived in China. I was I was grabbed by the Chinese police on a moment's notice. I had people shut up my apartment with machine guns going, I don't think you should come out today. I'm like, I got that. You know? But you know what? You're fucking alive. That's my point. You're alive. And you can do that here. You don't have to do all that. You can do that here. And so sometimes, I don't think I worry about too much in this crowd, but sometimes I get a little concerned when I look in somebody's eyes and I see their reaction when I say, oh, you have five guys that want to flog somebody?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
you're
I'm
the
that guy. I'm your fucking crash test dummy. Put me out there. Because you know what? I'm loving it. I'm alive. Yep. I'm loving that.
Absolutely. All right. So we've got some more volunteers here. How about you?
This is really about the group. It's just about what you just said. Okay, so you dodged missiles on, like as soon as you said that, I'm thinking of a guy running down a road screaming, fuck, 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 fuck.
Actually, worse, I was driving a vehicle. It wasn't me I was worried about. It was the four carloads of other people I was trying to keep alive.
Holy mm-hmm. shit.
I get a radio call, missile went wild, and they go, this is what you got to do to save everybody. I didn't give a shit if it hit me. Mm-hmm. I was worried about them.
Okay, I love this guy.
All right, yes. Okay, so we're going to take a short little interlude, and then we're going to get to you. Or who is the one? You? Raise your hand.
It's real fast.
Okay, go for it.
It's the best lesson I've ever learned from a movie, and most of you will probably know. It's you've got to live, live, live. Life is a banquet, and most poor sons of bitches are starving to death.
And amen. Very good. So I'm going to move around with a picture of our own Patrick. Yeah. 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 Okay, remind me. You'll get it.
Then you'll understand why I like steak tart.
Yes. That's him. Mm-hmm. See, the circumstance of this picture is it? Yeah, that old thing. Yeah, he was going to get his portrait taken, and he asked me to be a part of it. And it just kind of went out of control, didn't it?
Yes, it did. We're in control.
Oh, yeah. In all the right ways. But I bullied him. I was a thug. I bullied him into buying those assless shorts. And I a grateful nation of war, you know, is, you know, thanks you. Because he was rocking them shorts, wasn't he ever?
Passed on now.
Yeah. But he definitely captured a very magical moment. It was
last year.
Yeah.
Beautiful man. He's doing a photo shoot of 50 over to
Yeah, so you said. Say what?
He said,
that's me with him.
I asked him if he would do a
Yeah. Live, Mr. Live, Live, Live. Yeah. It was an absolutely wonderful, magical, transformative experience. And thank you so much. See? Isn't that nice? See?
Is somebody taking notes?
Yes. Huh. That's right. He's being very generous with that, aren't you? Okay. Yeah. Okay, so, what?
Just the look on his face was priceless.
Really was. I like yanking his chain. And I think we can see which one. Very good. All right, so, getting back to the main topic. It's a deep topic, it's a worthy topic, it's something that we need to say once in a while. The point I really need to make is coming out on the other side of it, because yes, tragedy, harm, damage, history, all these things that we've got dragging us down. But you'll notice that we've had this group now, I can't remember how many months, but it's got to be like 38 months, 39 months. And you notice that things haven't gone crashing into a brick wall. They're not going to. The reason why is because people are hungry for more. They're not tired of it yet. We haven't run out of the desire for connectedness on every level. Things are just going to get nicer and nicer, I promise. I'm making a stand for that. Things are changing. Like I said, our group is shifting. I'm basically handing away the group to a team of about 15 people. I'm still okay with that. There's been ups and downs. There's been controversy. There's been disagreements. It's normal. Like I said, this is not the first time I've done this. We're learning. We're renegotiating. We're doing all sorts of stuff. I promise. It's going very well. But like I said, I'm going to be going into my side projects, and I invite everybody to, you know, pay attention, because I say that I like to dance on the tip of the wave of change. That's my comfort zone. I like to find out what new thing works and then just keep playing with it and see what happens. And I invite you all to join me, like I said. So if you see anything in the newsletter that talks about tribal vibe, you know, come play in my mud puddle. It's a good one. So, anyone else like to contribute as far as tonight's topic about their own past? So let's talk about our relationship with our fathers, because that's central to male grief. It truly is. My relationship with my own father. I'll just go ahead and, you know, tell my story. I don't think I have it on audio anywhere. May as well do it now. I had a father who actively hated me. That sounds very self-pitying, but you ask any of my 9 siblings, and they will convey their shame at the huge relief that they had that I was the designated sick person of the family. That's the term for somebody who's always wrong. My father never used my actual first name. I was always the asshole. Final conversation I had with my father. He'd been jerking my chain, making me cry for weeks because he was dying of cancer. I was out in Grand Prairie, Texas, staying at a $20 a night hotel. Yes, it was a toilet. Trying to connect with him and try and come to some kind of completeness in our relationship. All he did was just make me cry, and he'd hang up on me. And I finally said, you know, in my whole life, you've never hugged me, and you've never told me that you love me. Now would be a really good time. Now that you're dying, tell me. I need to know. Do you love me? He stopped and he thought about it. He says, yeah, I love you. I just don't like you very much. And that is not a very good role model, except in the sense of being a negative role model. I'm that guy. I'm still him on many levels. I am that guy inside of me. But I'm being the other side of the coin. I'm being not him. So when I'm being a kind dad to a lot of people, I'm being not him. Because I'm not going to say that to somebody, because I know how deeply it can wound. That he was taking advantage of the tenderness. Let's hear some more stories. We've heard one, two. Let's hear another story. Please.
Well, no, so much of a story, but talking about it earlier about, I think for me, I wasn't initiated by my father. And my father wasn't initiated. And I'm not talking about doing anything like a harm to me as his son, but what I'm describing initiation is that he didn't take me away to send me out on a vision quest.
Yes.
You know, it's like, you know, they talk about the birds. He didn't teach me about the birds and the bees. And I guess the main thing is that early on he knew that I was gay. They didn't call it that back in the 70s. You know, in the black community, they called it, you was a sissy, you was a punk, and that was a really hot, somebody called you a sissy in the hood, that was like daggers being thrown in your heart. And he knew that, but he didn't know what to do with me. He didn't know, he provided for the family, and he worked all the time, but he didn't provide that emotional development that I needed, and he handed it off to my mother. And my mother did the raising. And as I look back now, is that I had to find it on my own. I had to learn on my own, which was, it had its not so good points and it had its good points. And throughout, you know, I'm 52 now, and I look back on it, is that, you know, he did the best that he could, and then I had to make peace with that, is that I can't have my father come back and redo, isn't, can't do a do-over. And while I'm here at this circle is that I want to be initiated, and I want to initiate men.
Yes.
And what you, and this is what we're doing here now. We're acknowledging one another and the whole realm and the whole scope of men. And for myself, I have a high, somebody else said it who's older, you know, I have a high sex drive, and that wasn't honored when I was growing up.
Yep.
You know, it was that, you know, being gay was, you know, it was not a good, it wasn't a good thing. And I'm, as you know, as I come in my life, I'm able to ask, you know, and it took time to ask for what I want, and it's always what I know is that I'm going to ask for what I want. I might not get what I want, but at least I ask for what I want. Mm-hmm. And I've had several, I wouldn't call them crises, I guess I'll call them transitions in my life, and that's where I'm at now. You know, I'm like really here fully to express who I am as a leather man, mm-hmm. Into kink. And I want to, you know, with the tribe, I want to initiate, and that could be in mentoring, mm-hmm. that could be mentoring in play, that could be mentoring in sex, or that could just be a brotherhood.
Yeah.
Is that and that's what I need, and that's what I feel. I did look at that video, and I wanted to point is that young boys, they're not being initiated.
Yep.
They're just being left on their own, just to do on their own, and TV is growing them up, and videos and music is what's raising them. And I'm taking a pledge here, you know, we have young men in here, is to, I'm your uncle. You know, you can call me, you don't have to call me Sir Magnum, you can call me Uncle Magnum. You know, I'm here, because in indigenous cultures, that's what they did. They took, you know, in African culture, in Australia, what's those kinds of Aboriginal people, they, you know, the women knew, but at a time when a boy became like 12, 13 years old, the women in the tribe, they knew that the uncles was coming and they was going to take that boy away and show him the ways of the world.
Yep.
And that's what I'm here to do, you know, and I don't know it all, but you can ask Unc. And, mm-hmm. if Uncle don't know, I'll point you to another uncle up in here.
So, yep. That's a very powerful statement. I really want to stop for a second and really applaud that, because he's making a declaration to us, with all of us listening, as dedicated listeners. He's making a stand for what it is that he believes in and what he wants. That he's not being a victim of his past, that yes, there's a yearning in his heart, but his way of rising beyond it is by saying, I didn't have that, but I will do that thing now. Like, show of hands here, how many people here have I personally coached in some way? Large amount of people. Yes, there's one. I have consciously taken on the role of being what is called the hairy man, the wild man. You read some Robert Bly, I guess it is, and Iron John and all that. The whole concept, I forget, I think it was National Geographic that had a page that was a slideshow of the shaman of many, many cultures. It was like 70 different outfits that these guys would wear. And they're wearing these outrageous outfits made out of plant, you know, matter and fur and horns and shells and stuff like that. And every one of them different. But, I mean, amazing cultures you didn't expect, you know, from Finland or from Scotland or from whatever. Ancient, ancient, ancient outfits that these people would be wearing to honor their past, to honor their traditions of passing wisdom on. The wild man, the hairy man of the tribe, is one who maintains the tribe's traditions. The shaman, the one who initiates the new, who sometimes has to stand in judgment. That someone who says, I certify that you have learned and that you are complete in that learning. Somebody has to say that, because if we don't know, we're always guessing. We always have a question mark over our heads. When I teach someone, let's say flogging or something like that, I actually do it very ritualistically. It may not seem like it when I do it, but I'm doing it very consciously about the process. When I'm teaching someone one-on-one, I'm doing it very consciously that I recognize that my words have great import. They have impact. And that's what I'm inviting other elders of the community to do. Because we do have knowledge. We don't have perfect knowledge. I'm quite clear on that. I know my knowledge sure as hell ain't perfect. But what I know, I will share with all my heart. And that I won't be stingy with it. And the reason why is because this needs to continue as a tradition. As I said, the elders of our tribe have worth, have value. And as I've said to them, they are worth their weight in diamonds and rubies. And that if we don't acknowledge that, if we don't notice, if we don't thank them for showing up and sharing what they know and sharing from the heart and teaching us from their life experience, we're throwing away a huge resource. And if you want to really, really understand the whole daddy thing, being a daddy is a wonderful experience because that's how we learn to be better at being a fully, fully realized man when we get older. Not so much in terms of, you know, you don't have to be a daddy to a boy or something like that, but being a kind, loving uncle, like I said, it's a topic I beat into the ground. The reason why is because right now our group is succeeding on this topic better than any other group on earth. And I hear about it. I hear about it from the guy in Brighton, England. I hear about it from the guy in China. I hear it from the guy in Dubai. I hear it from the people in Germany or in Detroit. I spent about an hour and a half talking with a guy in Detroit. These guys really are paying attention. They're hungry for this. This is where our world is going. We've been in the tragedy area for a long time. We've been in the post-Holocaust phase for too long. We're shifting into the next phase. We're shifting into taking ownership of each other's well-being, taking responsibility for each other, and knowing somebody enough to want to like them, even though you know all their flaws. This is about actually finding reasons to be tribal. We are evolved to be tribal. We have millions of years of evolution that have led us to this point where we need it. The problem, as I say, though, our brains are not evolved to have 4,000 Facebook friends. They're just not. And in order for us, yes, just a moment. In order for us to be able to relate to each other, we have to be more tribal. Our whole culture is shifting away from the monoculture and shifting towards smaller subsets of tribes. So, yes.
I just wanted to comment because you mentioned Robert Bly. So, the reason why I'm still around, the reason why I didn't give up or I didn't kill my father, because I asked that question earlier, is because of people like him. I actually met and knew Robert Bly and Rob McEwen. And they're cathartic. They reach into your soul. They pull it out. They make you look at it. And they make you put it back again and live it, right? And then you mentioned people from Dubai. I was in that bar. I was in the gay bar in Dubai. And I saw the soul of people that are standing there under repression and being free. And I was in China and I saw that, the freedom of being themselves under conditions that we don't experience here. It's the most beautiful thing in the world. It gives you the freedom. You're freed by them. That's the purity of it. That's the beauty of it.
Thank you. So we don't... Yes, just a moment. Yes, please.
So, in regards to Father...
Please speak up.
I didn't kill my father, but I was there during his passing. But growing up, I mean, he was the type of guy that if you got caught sucking your thumb, he'd tie your hands behind your back and had to sit on the couch. You know, that's just an example. That's just the way he was. Now, my mom divorced him, and I didn't get back in contact with him until I was like 15, but still a very abusive man, extremely abusive. And I went into the military when I was 17 and then got out, and I continued to, you know, try to foster a relationship with him, although he was not a very good communicator. He dealt with people on the level of fear and intimidation, either through, you know, expressing how bright he was or, he was 6'4", 220 pounds. So, the first time my dad respected that we can't came to an agreement of respect was we were outside one day, and I had come back on leave. I think it was one of my first leaves. And he said, well, did they teach you how to fight in the military? I had been on my own pretty much since I was 15. So I learned how to scrap pretty early on, you know. Yeah, Dad, you know. And he's like, well, here, let me show you a couple of things. So he proceeds to show me a couple of things because I'm, you know, wanting to be the good son. And, you know, and after a while, you know, there was a shed that was, you know, over in the backyard. Anyway, we were fairly close to that shed, and the roof came, it was a pitched roof, comes down. And, you know, after a while, I got kind of tired of it, and he just would not stop. So I turned around, and I slammed him up against that shed and broke three of his ribs, you know. And then, and you know, there was another occasion where, and this was, you know, and I tried so many times to connect with him on an, you know, on an emotional level. Just, you know, hey, how's it going? Try to get something deep going with the guy. And it just, you know, he just didn't have, although he was very bright, I mean, he just had the emotional, you know, of a thimble, you know? I mean, there wasn't, he couldn't do it, you know? And some people can't, you know? And that's just, I mean, that's just the way it fucking is. Yes, I don't know. So, you know, and that was kind of like that. At one time we went to go build my brother-in-law's garage in Maryland. And we were framing it out, and then we were getting the roof on. And he had said, so I told him, I said, we need to put some running boards down on this OSB because the roof is pitched, you know, and you could, if there's a cord for one of the saws laying around and there's no running board, catch your foot, you could slip off the roof, you know. He just absolutely hated whenever I came up with something that I said, you know, this might be bright to do. And he said something right there, and that was another time where I told him, I said, you know what, if you don't pipe down, I'm going to throw your fucking ass off this roof. I mean, it's like, come on, dude, you really, you know. But, you know, at the end, you know, I took care of him. He asked me to, he wanted to die at home. And he asked me to take care of him. And we hung out for 8 months, you know. And that man never told me he loved me, very rarely. Never told me he was proud of me, never to my face.
Yep.
You know, I always heard it third hand from everyone else in my family. Oh, your dad thinks you're the best. You know, your dad thinks this. Your dad thinks that. Really? I wouldn't be able to fucking tell you. He's never told me, you know. And that's just the way he was, you know. I'm a very opposite person, you know. I'm very, very much a communicator, you know, especially in Zach. I'm a kinky person. Anything that you can probably think of, well, not anything, but I'm on the kinky side, you know. And, you know, and I've been with, you know, guys that were fat, and I've been with, you know, models. I've been with, you know, even at my age now, I'm 42 years old, you know, and I've run the gamut, you know. And I've been with guys that look like models and have the shittiest sex in the world. I've been with a guy that's, you know, 40 pounds overweight, and it was a fucking blast, you know. It's you know, it's for me. So for me, you know, I'm a communicator, and it starts with, you know, good sex really is about communication, you know. And if you feel comfortable, you know, you're getting comfortable with the person saying, you know, this is what I enjoy. Are you willing to do this? And going in with me, I go in with a mindset that, you know, because before I used to, sex was about me. It was about getting off. It was about pleasing me. And, you know, that's what it was about, which really was crappy sex. It was crappy sex, you know. As soon as I turned my, you know, attention and focus on the in other individual's needs and wants, like, what do you like? I mean, go ahead. Let's talk about it. Tell me what you like. I don't care how freaky it is. I want to know, you know. And you can do that through watching porn with somebody, because someone can't, you know, some people just, they're afraid to express what they like, you know. And I don't know about you, but I can't read minds. I'm not good at that. Never have been, you know. But you can use pictures and all kinds of other stuff to get someone to start sharing exactly what they want. And then making it about them, you're going to get whatever you're wanting back. It's going to happen, you know. But I just, and trust me, I've only found this out over the last couple of years. You know, this is not something that's always been prevalent in my relationships. I had two relationships, both of them 10 years. And I like to think that they stayed together that long because, you know, communicate. You know? And my first marriage was totally monogamous for the first 10 years, you know, for the entire time we were married. And the second marriage, well, the first 8 years was monogamous, and after that, kind of, everyone was lying and cheating and, you know, doing the things that, you know, bad people do when they don't communicate. So, but that's all I got.
Good. Thank you for sharing. So, would you consider yourself to be an observant person?
Would I consider myself to be observant?
Yeah. Because you were talking about, you know, interrelating with people and finding out what they like and that sort of stuff. So, during a placing, do you consider yourself to be observant to their needs?
I think I'm observant to their needs, yeah.
That's definitely the impression I got. Did your father ever tell you about what his childhood was like?
No. I have a suspicion of what it was.
Yeah.
I suspect what it was like.
Yeah.
But we came from a real Republican, Southern Baptist family. Yeah. Gun-carrying, quiet, you know, people just felt... You took care of your shit. And that was it. And you didn't whine about it. You didn't cry about it. You just, you know, you dealt with it.
Man up.
That's it.
Yeah.
Which isn't, but which is not a healthy way to raise any child. It's my personal belief.
So would you say that in a way that by being so thoughtful and observant in the sack and, you know, making sure that the other, you know, the person you're playing with is having a really rocking good time, you're rebelling against that sort of upbringing, in a way, wouldn't you say?
I wouldn't say I'm rebelling.
Well, it's like you're going beyond it, let's say. Not so much rebelling. Yeah.
I would say that I'm choosing not to make the mistakes of my father.
Very good. And that's a choice that we can make. I see a lot of nodding heads. Thank you very much for sharing. Good job. Yes, please.
Well, okay, so I've never been to a group like this ever, and I'm 44 years old, and it's funny, I walked in here because I've been hearing about this group, and I sat down and I looked around at everybody and I heard your story, and I thought, why am I here? And it was kind of weird because I realized that I'm here probably for two reasons, one because of my dad, and also because of one experience. I never had an initiation. My dad and I never talked about sex at all,
yep.
Ever.
Show of hands, how many people can relate?
In fact, I think
majority.
The discussion, the birds and the bees conversation lasted like 30 seconds, and I said, I know about it already, shut up. No. But the thing was, my dad was raised by a blind man who was brilliant, and if my dad ever did anything wrong, he'd find a stick and beat the hell out of him. You know, and getting hit by a blind man, I'm sure you do as well.
Yeah.
My dad was perfect in the sense that he never got a B in his life. He went to Harvard. He was a genius. He did everything right in his life, but his parents never told him that he was a good person. And me, I was kind of expected to do the same thing, so I had a very safe upbringing in Orange County. Everything was, you know, supposed to be a certain way, but it took... And my dad, when he found that I had a male roommate in college that I had a crush on, he said, are you gay? And I lied to him, and I said, no. And he said, it's a dark and lonely road. Believe me, I know about these things, and, you know, you don't ever, you know, so his whole life, he, you know, was terrible, and so when I was 24 and I discovered the internet, I went online and married him for AOL, and I went to this house, and it was this millionaire who just bought a house, married wife and kids, and he bought a house, his wife wasn't moved in yet, and it was vacant, and he invited me over, and he was very handsome, very successful. And he got me high on cocaine, never tried it before. And here I'm this 23-year-old kid, and he got me so turned on that then this other guy came down the stairs that he didn't even tell me was there, this big Marine, and they gave me enemas, they fucked the hell out of me. I was there for like 2 days. I lied to my parents, I said it was at my friend's house. No one checked on me, but the weird thing was I liked it, and they made me like it. And then I never, ever talked about it since then. That was 20 years ago. And it's funny because all the things that turn me on in the sex department have something to do with either the way that guy looked or different things that happened that night. And it's funny because since then I've had relationships and all these different things. I've had great relationships. But when we don't talk about sex or we don't, like, explore things like that, I just get bored. And so it's kind of interesting. And, you know, it was funny. My dad came out to me when he, 10 years ago, he died this week. But when he retired, the day he retired from USC, he came home and he wasn't right. My mom told me to talk to him. He said, well, you know, I'm bisexual. You know, Teresa knows. And she goes, what? He came out at the age of like 65.
Yeah.
And for 2 years, he had the ability to try to deal with himself. And he actually went on. He was still married to my mom. He met a few guys, whatever. I even took him to this guy's house. And he was happy. But then he kind of lost it and he passed away. He never, you know, had the ability to really explore his real self.
Yeah.
And it's a shame.
Yeah. Thank you for sure. Nice. And what's your name?
Adam.
Adam. Very good. One of our newbies. Yes.
I'm going to take this on a different turn.
Speak up.
I'm going to take this on a different turn. I mean, we're all gay men. Some of us have been married.
Mm-hmm.
How do our sons look at us? How do we deal with them? And, you know, and married men are becoming really, really big right now in the gay community. Mm-hmm. You know, they have been married to women. They've had children. How do those children look at us? How do we treat them?
Yeah. Show of hands. How many people here have raised a child, whether you've been married to a woman or not? Okay. It's a handful of people. Yeah, I've raised 6 foster kids. I don't know if you knew that.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah. My youngest, I'm so proud of him. I'll have to put it in the newsletter because I'm bragging dad, but my youngest is a publicity guy in West Hollywood, and his most recent article doing a review of The Butler, the new movie, has selfies of him with Oprah and, you know, Cuba Gooding Jr. and all these other people. And when I first met him, that was not his story. When I first met him, he was, I think, 13 or 14. He was living downtown on the streets of San Diego. Every once in a while, he could sleep over at a 65-year-old man's house on a sheet in the corner, and he would be given food on condition that he would have sex with the 65-year-old. He had been in the foster care system for a few years. His father's favorite way of punishing him was to rape him. And when he got old enough and started complaining about it, then the father felt that it was important to discredit him by telling everybody that he had mental problems. And then they threw him into the foster care system at the age of 11. And he bounced from one household to another. And in every household, he's quite obviously gay. You know, he has a very strong gay accent. But in every heterosexual household that he would bounce into, the male of the family would try to have sex with him. And he'd run away. And when I met him, he had a lot of issues. My specialty is youth in crisis. And he was in serious crisis. You talk about distancing mechanisms. He had the whole list. And he was, when I first met him, it was because the guy that was trying to be his legal guardian was out of his wits. He couldn't cope with what was going on because this guy was like a fragmentation bomb when I first met him. And so when he tried pulling his usual, you know, distancing stuff with me when I first met him, I let him go on for a while, and I said, it's okay. I already like you. And I gently worked him through the processes so that I could become his legal guardian. And then eventually, I adopted him. But one of the most important communications I had to say with this wild young man, who had no trust, when I started San Diego League of Gentlemen, the local Leatherman's Club, around 1999, 2000, around there, he would walk in the front door and see a bunch of guys just like you and go, ah! And he'd go around the back, and back door, and he'd go through the kitchen, and he'd go through the bedroom, and he'd go through the closet, because the closet had 2 doors, to go into his bedroom because he couldn't stand to be around a bunch of older men because he had such trust issues. One of the conversations I had to have with him is I said, I am here to teach you how to be innocent. And he said, how? Because it's what he needed more than anything else. I said, the communication that I have to you, and this will be on the test, I said, just because you come from a bad beginning does not mean that that is where you end up. And I am proof of that. The fact that we could compare stories helped me have credibility with him. He still had trust issues. His biggest problem was talk to the hand, that he wouldn't listen to whatever life lessons I was trying to impart to him. And I'd have to get his attention. I'd have to grab him by the shoulders and look him right in the eye and make sure that he listened to what I said. And it was a real problem. But we had a breakthrough. He had never been to a dentist in his life, and his wisdom teeth were killing him. And it was messing with him, and he had terrible health problems from adenoids and from, you know, tonsils and all the rest of that stuff. And my husband, Dennis, and I took him through the processes to get him healthy. But when we brought him to, we had to pay for all this stuff ourselves. He had no health insurance. He could have. His father was a Marine. But in a fit of assholery, his father intentionally had him removed from his military health care. When I went to go adopt him, his father came up to me and said, you didn't ask my permission. I said, you know, honestly, I didn't want to talk to you based on what I've heard. He just slunk away. The lesson that I'm making, the point that I'm leading to, is that this young man needed somebody to believe in him, for him, the way he was, and accept him. One of the nicest things I ever said to him is I said, I've been watching you for 4 months, and I'm ready to give you your report card. You're perfectly normal. And it just about blew his head up. Because his whole life, he'd had people tell him he's a freak, he's a faggot, that he's crazy, that there's something innately wrong with him. I said, there's nothing wrong with you. You're a perfectly normal gay guy. I've seen a lot of them. You know, you're fine. But the breakthrough that we had was when he had to have his wisdom teeth pulled out, and they put him under. And this remote young man who'd been giving me grief for a couple of years by that point, and I stuck with him. I never gave up on him. But he got drugged up because he had to have these teeth pulled. And I waited. I was there for him the whole time. And when he came out and he was still on the drugs, he told me what he really thought of me. He said, I love you, Daddy. It was the nicest thing I've ever heard in my life. Made it all worth it. And ever since then, he has proven me right about his character. Because the moment I met him, I could tell he was worth it. He wasn't a project for me, I promise you guys. Please be aware. No more than any of you guys is a project for me. Yes, I say, I'm going to take you under my wing. But it's not because I feel like it makes me feel more important or anything, but because if I perceive that someone has character, if I perceive that someone is really worth it, and I'm really sensitive that way, I've got the biggest antennas, you know. But you guys keep proving me right, just like he did. And he's so happy now, and he's so successful, and he's so loved, and he's so respected, and he's a name in the industry. And just as a quick point, one of the problems we had is I bought him one of the first iPhones when they came out, and then he lost it. And he was in a dead panic because this was in the days before you could remotely erase it. It was on the horizon, but they hadn't gotten to that point yet. And he was freaked out because he had the personal phone numbers of Jane Fonda and, it's right on the tip of my tongue. But, you know, a ton of famous people that he's having lunch with, and he's got their personal numbers, and now his phone got stolen. Well, somebody wiped it, thank God, so he didn't get in a lot of trouble. But, I mean, to be able to have him go from where he was to where he is now. He's not a wealthy man, but he's excited and he's happy and he's in the fucking game. And that's my payoff. My reason for doing that is because I know what it's like to be on the other side. And that's just one of my kids. And the reason why I've done this is because it's worth it. Now, in question to your, in answer to what you were talking about how they see us, they have the same issues with me as any man has with his own father. You know, I'm thinking of the Mike and the Mechanic song, The Living Years. Every generation blames the one before. It's always going to be that way. But I'm not the ogre, I'm glad to say. None of my kids. I've never been the ogre. As with all of you as my witness, I have never abused a single one of them. I have never, ever betrayed a trust. I've never left them dangling. I've never ignored them. If they needed something from me, I was always there 100% of the time. I wish that our relationships were more perfect, just as any man would with his kids. So who else would like to talk about the relationship with their kids? Somebody had something to say? No?
Well, I mean, I have a granddaughter whose father is incarcerated.
Yes.
And so she looks up to me. I get calls all the time as to, she looks at me like I'm her father.
Yes.
And I'm raising her. She has problems. She calls me.
Yep.
Case in point, she texted me today and said she has blue hair now. And it's like, okay. But, you know, and I asked her why. And I didn't yell at her. And,
right.
You know, but it's, the thing is our parents came from a different time, a different era, or era, whatever. And they were just different. And we as a group, when we grew up, didn't really have the same problems that they had to go through. And now we're, you know, there's another group coming up. And everybody is going to have different ways of looking at life. You know, like if I said to him, if he had two sons, how would he have dealt with them? Would he have been nasty? I mean, he knows what he went through with his father. Would he go through the same thing with his children? You know, would he be that nasty? Would he be taking drugs? I mean, it's just a real... It's a horrible problem, but it's something that gay men don't handle except if they were married and they have children.
Very good. Anyone else have any thoughts? Any observations? Any summations? Anything that you'd like to share? Yes, please.
I don't know.
Speak up. Yes.
I don't know if it's happened with any of the other men here, but there is a point in time where my dad just no longer played with me.
Yes.
He no longer nurtured me.
How old were you?
I was probably 9, 10, you know. And it was just at that. But when I look back, I mean, a lot of those guys are coming home from Vietnam.
Yep.
And their experiences there. And that changed pretty much the fabric of society in that period. And that was the 60s, and I remember, you know, longing, like, to be hugged and held. And so when a young man seeks that elsewhere and it crosses your path, unfortunately for me, there were a few violent experiences, like being raped and that thing, and then never being able to tell a soul about it.
Yep.
And so I've lived with that all this time. And it was only until he, too, got sick with cancer and looking after him and bathing him and doing all these things. And then being the last person with him when he died to help him cross over. And that was, I was honored. And then from someone else, I finally heard he loved you.
Mm-hmm.
He loved me. I don't understand it. But I'm glad that it happened even after the fact, to just know that I was loved. Because my partner always loved me. Through all the shit that I went through, mm-hmm. I knew I was always loved. So I always flourished. Even in my depression and sadness, I flourished. So it was, I don't know, it's really strange.
Thank you. The point that I want to make to my brothers in this room, and you are all my brothers, one of the agreements I had to make with the males in my family is that it's okay to say that we love each other. and as much as we want without embarrassment. That was a new rule that I started in our family. I said, if you look at our family culture, at every, see, I'm one of 10 siblings. I have three brothers and six sisters. I'm the youngest of the males. But I said, if you look at every family wedding, there's a cluster of women and children. They all know each other. They have cousins, lunches, because they're so close. Everyone's close, close, close. And then there's a male over there, and a male over there, and a male over there. And we're not close. We don't know each other. We don't know how to be with each other because we never learned how. That was the main thing I struggled with as a father, is how to keep being close, even though everything in me said, I'm not supposed to be. I had to keep breaking past my own fears of being close. Because I didn't know how to be a man, because nobody taught me. So I had to make up my own damn rules, and I had to keep breaking past my inhibitions. So yes, hold that thought. Yes, you were going
to
say.
Well, I just want to say about fathers and sons. My boyfriend has a 17-year-old son who lives with his grandparents, my boyfriend's parents. But my boyfriend raised him for a long period of time, and he's got some autism spectrum and some things like that, and just was a little too much for a single dad to handle when he lost his job. And but one, the one thing that my boyfriend does do well is make sure to give him time, and also does an excellent job of bringing him around all his gunkles, his gay uncles.
Yes.
You know, we don't do the, we're going to shield him from, mm-mm. You know, we run the Bear Group for Orange County. We don't shield him from the group of guys that we are friends with. We don't change our entire life to just do this, this fantasy of this, you know,
protect the children.
World.
Yeah.
Yeah. Instead, we
living
bring,
one life instead of two.
Right.
Yes.
Instead, we bring him along with us, and this kid gets the benefit of all of these guys that have their own family members that won't let them anywhere near their kids.
Oh, yeah.
Who are just like, oh, I have this old video game that I'm not using anymore. Would you like it? And,
yes.
You know, just want to talk to him and are so interested to hear what his perspective is on things and what, you know, what, you know, and they're all trying to stay cool. So they all want to talk to him to find out what the latest and greatest thing is. And, you know, instead of him having, he's, you know, mild autism spectrum, so he's very high functioning, but instead of him having this view of gay men that they're all these sick pervs that are, you know, all bad and, you know, awful, like, you know, he has this view that he's just as comfortable around gay men as he would be about any around anyone else.
Yeah.
And he's totally just like, whatever, you know, you're gay, you're straight, everybody likes sex, big deal. And, you know, it's, you know, nothing's perfect, you know, I'm definitely not a good parent, but, you know, and my partner's not the best either. It was one of those, oops, it happened 20 years ago, now what do I do, kind of situations. But, you know, everyone's doing their best, and, you know, the kid has a very much more well-rounded perspective of the world than he would if my partner had just hit him away.
I agree. So. Yeah, I had that experience, too. One of the kids I raised is my nephew. His mom just wasn't able to cope, so I took him on when he was 4. And I used to go to Black's Beach a lot, you know, all summer. And I would always bring him with me.
Right.
Say what?
The exercise.
Right. I mean, I liked it, you know. I mean, but if I was bringing him, I was being a parent. But I hung around with a group of about 40 gay men, you know, always the same crew. And they were all his uncles. They all loved him dearly. They, you know, they would, hang on, you're getting a little too close to, you know, you're getting too deep in the water. Come on back. They were always watching him like hawks, making sure he was okay. You sure you're not hungry? I got an apple for you. That sort of stuff. Just taking really good care of him. And then one day they got all upset and they gathered around Eric like yaks, facing outward. I said, what's going on? Well, that guy over there, you know, likes having sex with little kids. And they were all protecting him. And I went and talked to the guy. I said, this might not be a good area to hang out. He says, okay. And he left. But the point is that my older brother got real confrontational with me about it years later. He says, how dare you expose that child to those perverts? And I said, dude, you're getting angry about a child you don't give a fuck about. I said, you've never even spoken to him. So you lack the moral authority. You need to back off now. I said, I'm his parent. I get to judge. You don't. So, yes, Marty.
I'm starting to forget things. I have to write them down. I just want to know that when you're in a relationship, you're with somebody, have you ever said, oh, my God, I'm sounding like my father?
Yeah. How many people have looked in the mirror and seen your father? Yeah. Lots of hints. Oh, yeah. Mother, too. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's not a pretty sight sometimes. Yes. Yes.
Yeah, I know I'm just 20 and all that, and I wasn't around my father, but I was around my grandfather. I have been noticing I'm very, very, very strict on the way things normally go, and it is a little nervous because it's just, I'm starting to see myself as my grandfather a lot, and it is kind of freaking me out a little bit.
Being conscious of it helps.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's when you're not being conscious about it is when it becomes a problem.
Take
you know.
The good stuff and discard the bad.
Oh, yeah. That's exactly what I did with him. Because when I was growing up, yeah, he was an abusive fucker from hell. I mean, he beat the hell out of you. He didn't care if it was a 2x4, wrench, screwdriver, whatever he could just grab and knock the hell out of you, he did it with. But that was the bad part. But he also taught me a bunch of good stuff. I mean, he taught you if you want something, go bust your ass for it. Don't sit there and, you know, have your hands out and just start running door to door for something. If you want it, go work. Go make you some cash. And if you have certain things that you believe in, stick by it. And, you know, you don't have to give in to what everybody else says to you. And just be happy with who you are.
Very good. Marty, I cut you off. Was there anything else?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Just making sure. So, yes, please.
One of the things I recognize from the group and you saying it is we almost, and you've said it, and I realize I do too, you act actually opposite of your parents or for the better, not opposite.
Right.
You want the better traits. You want the better traits and get rid of the traits you didn't like so much. And you're right, when you do say certain sayings that they said, you said, or do certain things they did, you're like, that's one I didn't want to do, you know, and I don't want to repeat it. And you work, or I work, at not trying to do the bad traits that I see, you know. And if people that want to improve, or if I want to improve, that's what I do, is I concentrate on the better traits. And I think a lot of people do. I don't know, these people who continue to be mean or bad, I don't know how they... where they get it from, you know. But I have pretty good parents. I have pretty good parents. So it kind of goes like that. But the traits I don't like or I don't want, you know, I'm like, oh. And then I pick up the better ones, I hope.
Well, I guess the point that I wanted to make, and thank you for sharing that, because I'm relating to what they're saying. There's some things that I have very little control over, that certain behavior patterns that I repeat, and I really wish that I could cut them off like a diseased limb or something like that. But they're part of me, and that's just how it is. And my philosophy is, if you can't help being this way, be good at it. You know, if you can't help being the dad, then be the dad in a big way. You know, if you can't help being, you know, passionate, be really fucking passionate. You know, whatever it is, you're going to be that way, you may as well just really live life all the way. So with that wonderful thought, you know, that summation, I'm going to cut you guys loose. This has been a really good one tonight. I think I'm really proud of the new guys for sharing so much. It's been a very, very good talk tonight. So we're going to have more stuff. It won't be quite so deep and heavy that's coming up. But I can't think what it is. So thank you.